Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 242, Top 5 Star Wars Disney Characters. I'm, as always, Murphy host Jason Hunt, and with me, the Kylo Ren to my Directochronic, we have Carl.
Jason, I'm so glad you're back.
I'm so glad you're back, too.
Just beating and bopping to the model nodes.
Oh, yes.
Jason,
that, planned or something.
We haven't been together since the sizzle reel episode.
Oh my god!
And even that feels like it was forever ago.
It was, and it was not planned.
That's true. I'm so glad that you're back.
Me too. I'm so glad that we're back.
I was going to say, yeah, you were only gone a week, so.
Yeah, true.
I had so much fun recording, though, with Greg last week. If you did not listen to our previous episode with my friend Greg Cass, you've got to listen to it. It is so good. And that is, I mean, unless, like, in-depth, really heavy topics isn't your jam, which is fine, then you may not enjoy it. But Greg and I had a great discussion about some of these essential elements of Star Wars, and I absolutely loved doing that episode. But, boy, am I glad you're back.
Aw, shucks.
And
I'm glad to be back too.
Nothing.
Glad to have you back.
Yeah. Well, nothing says Wampa's Lair quite like a top five list. Am I right?
Right.
Littered.
I mean,
littered.
Kind of the way we roll.
Yeah. Littered with honorable mentions, of course. But yeah, here we are. You know, a few years into the Disney Star Wars franchise, and we've gotten a plethora of new characters between Rogue One, Force Awakens, and Rebels. And this comes out of a discussion I had with Greg about a month ago where he's like, oh, you should do a new top five characters list on the show because I bet you some of these new characters might fit in. And I was like, actually, I don't know, maybe one or two would. But I was like, at the end of the day, my top five would probably still be pretty much the same. And I was like, but might as well take all of those great characters and top five them. That way we can talk about all these great characters.
Yes.
So
I agree.
If you like top five lists, you're gonna have a good time.
Have we got a show for you?
Before we get into that, though, I have been remiss yet again to give credit where credit is due, which is our faithful patrons over on Patreon. And this episode of the Wampa's Lair is unofficially but officially brought to you by Royce Gengler. So, Royce, thank you so much for your support of the show. And apologies that it's taken us probably 2 months to give you the shout-out that you deserved a while back. But this fun episode of the Wampa's Lair is thanks to our good patron, Royce. So, Royce, thank you again.
And probably one of the coolest names in our Patreon support is Royce Gengler.
Yes, very Star Warsy.
Yes.
But as if you haven't noticed, we've posted some changes to our Patreon page, which we're going to talk about at the end of the episode. So if you're interested in what's going on there, stick around to the end of the show.
Yes. But before we get into our topic, Carl, we had a poll that we posted. What all is going on with this poll? What are we doing here?
Yeah, so this turned into a little bit more of a mess than I thought it would. Not a mess, but obviously going all over the place. So Greg and I last week recorded these, you know, top essential parts of Star Wars elements. And we've broken the list into 10 things. We did the first five, and then at the start of September, we're going to do the final five. But we want to go through, so like every other week, like we've done in the past with our polls, and ask you guys your favorite scene based on these elements. So our first element that we talked about was fun/action, right? Like it's one of the biggest essential parts of Star Wars. So we asked you guys, what is your favorite fun and action scene in Star Wars. And just a quick heads up, we are recording a few days before we post. So if you posted on Wednesday or Thursday morning, unfortunately, we missed you on the list. So just in case you're wondering, like, hey, I wrote in, why didn't they read my response? That is why.
Yes.
But yeah, again, it's as wide and dynamic as the Star Wars fan community itself. There are a lot of responses. So I think, Jason, you're just going to read them all. Is that right?
I've got the tally here.
Okay,
and
awesome.
Holy buckets, is it a tally?
Yeah, I bet it is.
So some people had just one answer for fun and adventure. Some people had an answer for fun, an answer for an adventure. Everything that was said made it on this list, and I put a tally mark next to it. So bear with me. Here we go. In third place, with one vote each, that gives you an idea of how broad this topic is going to be, we have Poe Dameron flying the X-Wing on Takodana above the lake, taking out all the TIE fighters. We have the Han and Chewie interactions in The Empire Strikes Back, which is not quite a scene, but whatever. The Rey, Finn, and Kylo Ren duel in The Force Awakens. We have the destruction of Jedha as a cool action sequence. The escape from Jabba's lair. The Poe and Finn steal the TIE fighter scene. The Falcon versus the TIEs in A New Hope. Jar Jar's tongue zap with the pod racer energy binders. The asteroid chase from The Empire Strikes Back. The Scarif ground assault. The Han and Leia bickering from A New Hope. The pod race. And the space battle over Coruscant. Second place with two votes each, we have the Scarif space battle. We have the Battle of Yavin. The Duel of the Fates, which is where Carl put his response, correct?
Yes, sir. And I mean, I talked about it in last week's episode, so I'm not going to really say anything. But just love that scene. So fun.
It's a good scene.
It is.
And then also with two votes in second place is the Geonosis Arena, which is where my vote went. But of course, I also cheated and I also included Act 3 of Revenge of the Sith sort of on the side. Or not Revenge of the Sith, excuse me, Return of the Jedi. Why did I say Revenge of the Sith? But yes, Act 3 of Return of the Jedi. Very fun. Very action. very fun, very action.
Very fun, very action.
In first place, with three votes each, we had the Luke versus Vader and Palpatine in Return of the Jedi. We have the Death Star prison break sequence and the battle over Endor. So there we go. That is what the Larians say, and it's a lot. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, as soon as I kind of put that together, I was like, wait a minute, this might not go as seamlessly as I was hoping. But that's all right. At the end of this episode, we'll have a matchup for you, as per usual. Continuing the every other episode type deal with a poll or a matchup.
Yes.
And without further ado, let's talk about these Disney's characters.
Yeah.
Star Wars Disney characters.
Yes. The Star Wars characters from the Disney era.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Not just Disney characters in general.
Right. So how many honorable mentions did you get?
I have two.
Okay, good. Me too.
I almost gave myself three, but I was like, no, we only ever allow ourselves two honorable mentions. So
Right. So shall you go first or shall I?
Why don't you go first?
Okay. My first honorable mention is going to be Director Krennic.
Nice.
I like Krennic. I know some people roll their eyes at him. He's you know, sort of just mustache twirling. Yes, he is, but he's also great. I mean, come on. How can you not enjoy someone who gets so much energy into what he says that he spits all over the place?
Sorry, yes. I just wanted to put his theme in the background.
Deploy the galaxy! Krennic.
Krennic.
But yes, no, I love Krennic. I think he's great. He's a he's a unique take on a Imperial officer. And I mean, come on, I love the cape.
You do love yourself a good cape.
I do. So I mean, there's this list. Many of these characters, there's not going to be the whole deep reason as to why they're on my list, but because other than I just like them, and Director Krennic is one of them. So I've got his 6-inch Black Series figure over my shoulder on my bookshelf, weapon primed, ready, and waiting.
His weapon is so cool. Apparently, like, we learned this through Battlefront, which I still never got the Scarif level because I don't think I've played Battlefront in a long time. But his gun is like some sort of almost like old school, like you load it like an old school guns type of a thing.
He's got, like, you know, it's a limited, like a revolver type of thing, like, yeah. It's got limited shots and he has to keep reloading it,
right? Exactly, which I just think is really cool. I love
it. It means he has to be very precise with his shots,
right? I love that you put him on your list. He's not on my list. And again, he is somebody that would have been if we'd been able to go like a little bit more stretched out. Like you said, he's a very different kind of Imperial officer. I'm like halfway through the Thrawn novel right now, the new one by Timothy Zahn. And it's slowed down for me at least. I know some folks have loved it. And again, I don't dislike it, but it's not the most action-packed book. It's a lot of like plotting and calculations, which makes sense for Thrawn's character. But right, Krennic is so different from Thrawn, who's also so different from Tarkin, who's so different from Piet, and so on and so on. What I like about Krennic is how fiery he is.
Yes.
My favorite scene with him, right, is like, you know, we stand here amidst my achievements, not yours. Yes. You know, right? Like, oh, it's so good. He's so pissed.
It is.
Like, this is the first ever blue-collar Imperial officer.
Right. This is the first officer who actually worked for his job.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't who he knew took him where he went, right? Like, this is... I mean, he's ultimate to... In real-world terms, he's a construction manager in a way, right? Like, he's overseeing a huge construction project. And Tarkin is just waiting there to swoop in and take credit, or swoop in and at least take over and take control. So yeah, I really like that. And it, even like when Krennic dies at the end of Rogue One, you know, I almost feel a little bad for him.
Well, I mean, come on. He was directly hit by the Death Star laser. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing left to bury.
He's literally vaporized. Yeah. Right. What a great shot too, by the way, the reflection in his eye of the beam.
So good. All right, what's your first honorable mention?
My first honorable mention is Hera Syndulla.
Oh, nice.
And I really like Hera's she's like a great background character in the sense of like she would never be one of my all-time favorite characters, but she brings a consistency to the Rebels show because Hera is very much the mother figure, right? Like she is the one who keeps the family together. She's the calm for Kanan when he's stressed out or bugging out. She's the one who reminds Ezra what he's capable of. I mean, she is very much a mother figure in Star Wars, much more so than really any other Star Wars character if you think about it. I mean, Padme never has a chance to be a mother. Shmi. Let's not forget Shmi. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of questions about fathers, obviously, like Anakin and Vader. But there's not a huge mother thing. And I think Hera is a very good example of a strong mother because of what she provides for the crew. And I like that consistency. And not to mention, of course, like her amazing pilot attributes. I love a good pilot. And she's good with a blaster. Not afraid to go undercover. Like she's got it all. But I think the thing that stands out most to me is, you know, her way of kind of knitting the ghost crew together into a family.
Yes.
And she often refers to them as a family. So, and right. And all those little, you know, didn't happen as much in the latest season, but especially season 1 and 2, those, you know, aside moments she has with Kanan where she talks about, you know, like Sabine and Ezra, and she basically refers to them as the kids. Right. So yeah, that's why his hair is on my list.
Well, I shall refrain from commenting anymore at this point.
Okay.
So, my second honorable mention, and I'm kind of cheating here slightly, is going to be Rey in BB-8. Rey is a character who I think, after seeing The Last Jedi, is probably going to be higher on this list than she is right now. I think she's a very fascinating new character, but she's also very much still a blank slate. Because everything exciting about her is her potential. And I like the fact, you know, I like what we got with her in The Force Awakens. I'm excited to see what we're going to get with her and her training and stuff in The Last Jedi. But right now she's still, you know, obviously we know that she's, you know, destined for greatness with the Force. The Force is with her. The lightsaber is calling out to her. She was able to tap into the Force in order to defeat Kylo Ren. But she's still largely kind of a blank slate. And I think The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi is really going to start defining who Rey is, which I think will change where her placement is on my list right now. But as of right now, she's going to be an honorable mention. And I had to slip BB-8 in there somewhere because I love that little guy. So BB-8's great. And since he hangs out with Rey a lot, I figured I'd slip him in here. So
nice. Yeah, I'm gonna reserve comment as well. Because, of course, Rey is on my list too. So I will go into my next honorable mention, which is the most recent lead in a Star Wars film, which is Jyn Erso.
Nice.
I really like Jyn. When Rogue One was first pitched to us, again, it was like kind of this heist movie with like a big cast, and like early on we didn't even know if there was going to be like a main character per se. But it's very clear that when they did, I don't know if it was reshoots or rewrites or whatever, but it very much became Jyn was the heart of the story, right? She's very much the protagonist.
Yes.
And the reason I like Jyn so much is because she's a great character who essentially goes through the hero's journey in one movie. And again, like that, like reference back to kind of what Greg and I were talking about on the last episode, but right, one of the huge important elements of Star Wars in the mythology category is the presence of a hero's journey with the specific hero of the story, right? Like Rey is clearly started on hers. Anakin had one in a way. I mean, it's a tragic one. Luke is paramount, right? But Jyn, because it's a standalone movie, has that entire development in one movie. And I just thought that was really great. In a way, some of the other characters do as well, but Jyn's is just, you know, front and center. And the thing I love about her journey is essentially it's this journey about finding her way home, right? It's like that movie with the two dogs and a cat, Homeward Bound, which is great.
I love that movie.
I do too. But right, like it's so great. I mean, the movie opens with this prologue where Jyn, all right, we learn about her trauma, what affects her for the rest of her life is watching her family basically torn apart in front of her. And the rest of, so then she finds a family with Saw, who basically in her eyes abandons her because of, you know, when people figure out who she is, but it's kind of her journey home and finding her way back home again. And she finally finds that at the end of the film, right? Like she thinks she has it when they find her father, he dies. So as her journey continues, she gives herself over to the rebellion and becomes part of this family there. So I love just seeing that, like, that development of her character throughout the movie, from somebody who's a very solitary, independent figure to a figure who's successful and has meaning because she finds family, she finds community, and finds a purpose. You know, her purpose is constantly changing throughout the movie. When we first meet her, her only purpose is to be free of prison, and then it evolves into finding her father, and then it evolves even further into completing her father's work in a way.
And she also goes from someone who looks out only for herself to a very selfless character as well. So it's, you know, there's a lot that happens in there. And a lot of it's subtext and not said and spelled out. So that's kind of nice, too. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Jin's great. And again, like, she's the action scenes we get with her. I mean, she's a very capable warrior as well. I mean, I was watching Rogue One last night, and I think it's really neat. The scene when she and Cassian are cornered by the stormtroopers on Jedha, right, where Cassian has to turn around and run away, and then Jin whips out her, like, you know, beatdown stick. and we see both Jin and Cassian, you know, come out from around the corner to engage, you know, each side of the stormtroopers. And normally, and I think, again, not to read too much into this, but normally in the story, you probably would have followed Cassian's journey there. Like, right, Cassian turning around and shooting down all the stormtroopers as kind of the male hero. But instead it follows Jin because she is, again, the hero of this story. So next time you watch Rogue One, if you haven't noticed this, but watch as they both come out to engage. When Jin goes into hand-to-hand combat mode, Cassian does whip around and obviously take out all the stormtroopers with his blaster. But it's just really neat to see that we kind of get that, like, Cassian's fight is inconsequential. What matters is showing off Jin's skills, because we almost can assume that Cassian knows his stuff. But we're being clued into how much of a badass Jin is by she takes out all these troopers essentially by her hands and then takes out a couple real quick with two shots. Like she is a warrior in her own right.
Right. Yeah, no, she's a great character. She's not on my list here, but definitely an added character to the Star Wars mythos that feels totally right in Star Wars. So I definitely appreciate and like Jin a lot, but not on my list. So
well, let's hop into the top five then, shall we?
All right. Well, my top five is is kicked off with a character who was in just a handful of episodes of Star Wars Rebels. And that would be the Bendu. I love the Bendu so flippin' much. Number one, I mean, come on, he's voiced by Tom Baker, who's my favorite doctor in the world. So that automatically raises him pretty high in my esteem. But as a character, he's fascinating. I love the fact that the idea that he's not only is he someone who establishes himself as the one in the middle, he's neither dark nor light, not Jedi or Sith. He's the one in the middle. But then when he's pushed, he fights to remain there. He's not going to be swayed. He's, you know, stubborn. He's curmudgeonly. He's, you know, he's not going to be moved by the plight of the people that he's been interacting with. He is going to remain in that neutral middle position. And so when he, you know, we finally see him in his full terrifying glory there at the end of season 3 of Rebels, he's, you know, killing indiscriminately almost, you know. Obviously, most of his ire is absorbed and taken out by the Imperial troopers there. But there are Rebel fighters that go down as well. And we're not quite sure if he's trying to kill Kanan or just freak him out there at the end either. So, you know, he's an interesting character, and I will be fascinated to see if he comes back at all this next season. I kind of doubt it, but it would be really interesting to see if he did show up.
Yeah, he's not on my list. He probably wouldn't even be in my top 15 Star Wars.
I mean, trust me, I know. I'm probably one of the few people that have him this high on their list. But I love the character.
I like it. I mean, again, this is what I've missed, Jason. Your perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Bendu. I'm still really not on board with him. More will be seen, I think. I think the introduction of the Bendu will have more to say in regards to Last Jedi than anything else, right? Like his, I think his figure is going to, his character is going to inform what's to come more than anything. He's okay. I don't dislike him. My favorite part about the Bendu is that he essentially, in a way, becomes Kanan's new master for a short period, right? Yeah. So this idea of the middle is very much going to be passed off onto Kanan. So the thing I'm curious most about the Bendu is his effect on the mythology at large, or our characters themselves, even in general, more so than him in and of himself.
Yeah, he's a larger than life character whose impact will be seen on those who interacted with him and the lore that he affects. That's very true.
Yeah, true.
But I mean, how can you not, you know, just get chills sometimes when you hear him yell, "Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight."
Oh, you crushed it.
I love it. So I love the Bendu. So anyway, anything else on the Bendu before we get to your number five?
No, Jason Hunt, I am done. I'm no voice actor.
What's your number five?
My number five is actually Kylo Ren. And Kylo really intrigues me in the sense of he's a new type of Star Wars villain, right? I mean, he is on the, and I don't even know if this is a thing in mythology, but he's on a villain's journey, right? I mean, right. We don't necessarily see him as an all good character. I mean, throughout the movie, it's pretty clear he's a bad guy. But right, like he is someone, again, in his private moments or even his intimate conversations with Snoke, this is someone who's struggling with the light. He's trying to be more dark side-y, if you will. I have a feeling he'll go up on my list as we learn more about him. I'm just really intrigued by him. He's as far as we know, he's at least the one Skywalker whose story isn't from the next generation, right? Like whether or not Rey is, we don't know. But it is obvious that Kylo is a Skywalker, and it's just really cool watching an incomplete villain working towards completion in a way. I really like how he's just like this raw ball of energy, right? I mean, it's which is, you know, personified in his lightsaber. I mean, the fact that his lightsaber is so erratic and so unstable, I mean, it's the perfect symbol for him as a character. And, you know, throughout the movie, we see Kylo going into these fits of rage. And I like that. Like, again, these new First Order villains are much more off the handlebars than, you know, your Imperial villains, for instance. So it's just really cool seeing a new type of villain. And he is really, really powerful. I mean, again, he's got Skywalker blood in him, but he's nowhere near what clearly Darth Vader was. I mean, Rey says as much during their interrogation scene. Yeah, I love his look. I love his helmet, which I hope we get to see some of in Last Jedi. I have a feeling that he's going to be helmetless for a lot of the movie. I don't know. Again, a character we definitely want to learn more about, but I'm really curious to see where his journey goes. He's Han Solo's son. I got to give him some love even just for that.
I'm going to hold off on some thoughts on Kylo for a minute, so...
Okay. And the thing I like about Kylo too is he's incomplete in the same way that a hero is when they start their journey, right? Like a hero is seeking something. They're seeking something for themselves and for the galaxy at large. Kylo's also seeking something. I mean, I guess the scene where he's talking to Vader's mask is he's looking to finish what Vader began, which is the eradication of the Jedi, I guess, but to what end, right? Like, why does Kylo want to do that? And again, I think that's going to continue to unfold for us. But I'm really excited to see what that holds for him. And also, can he be redeemed? I mean, we saw Vader do... If you go back to, like... Again, neither of us were there, but for those of you who probably, you know, who grew up with the original trilogy, and right? You didn't know Vader was Luke's father until the end of Empire. And then even with Jedi, it's like, okay, well, can this character be redeemed? Well, we've seen him kill more of his own men than like the good guys. I mean, he's clearly not a good guy. He's tortured Han. He's done horrible things, but in a way he is redeemable. He's never done anything like so horrendous that you would ever say like, oh, he's not redeemable. But Kylo kills his father, who's also Han Solo. And right. Like one of the biggest questions was afterwards is, can Kylo be redeemed? And I mean, I think the answer is yes. I don't know exactly how, but so that'll be something very interesting to see too. Is will Kylo die as Kylo Ren, or will he die as Ben Solo or Ben Skywalker, whatever his last name might be? But time will tell.
Time will definitely tell. Like I said, I'm gonna hold off some thought on Kylo here for a second. So I'm going to go into my number four.
Yes.
And this is one that you mentioned already, Hera Syndulla. So I like Hera. I like Hera a lot. And no, it's not just because I got to have a photo op and autograph with Vanessa Marshall at Star Wars Celebration. Although that was pretty cool. I think Hera is a great addition because to the Star Wars mythology, because she's a character who starts off as sort of the captain of the ship. You know, she's the one who really is in charge. She's the one who's holding this fledgling family together in the first season of Star Wars Rebels. She's the one that, you know, reminds everyone that, hey, you know, we're family, we bicker, we fight, don't worry, we'll get through this. And then she begins to make some moves. And not only is she pulling sort of a double duty here with, you know, being the backbone of the Ghost crew, she's the glue that holds everybody together. She's the one who everyone at the end of the day turns to rely on. But she's also got plans to fight the Empire and plans to join the Rebels. And then she, you know, fully embraces that, becomes captain and then General Syndulla with her, you know, fighter squadron, with Phoenix Squadron and everything. And she's, you know, tried to take on Thrawn. You know, she's not as clever as he is, but she's definitely got more heart and more will to fight, I think, than Thrawn does, which is why they're able to keep escaping. But she's definitely a character who I think we'll have to see where her loyalties really lie this coming season of Rebels, whether that lies more with the family that they've created in the Ghost crew, or was more with the Rebels and the Alliance and the plans and the machinations that they're having to do to try and stay alive and survive. Because we seem to have gotten a little bit of that balancing act that she's walking. And I think, you know, especially after the end of season three, we're really going to have, you know, she's really going to have to make a choice. You know, what's more important, this family or the Rebels? And that's going to be a very difficult choice because both are good and both are right in a sense. And I'm really interested to see where she might have to go. And I'm purely speculating on that being a choice that she's going to have to make. Maybe she won't. Maybe she'll be, you know, perfectly fine walking that fine line between the two. But I think it'd be interesting if she did, because I feel like she's, you know, walking a razor thin edge between this family that she's helped to create and is an integral part of, and, you know, leading the Rebels. She's not a as high level as someone like a Leia or General Dodonna, but she's one of those Maedhin sort of level folks who keep things running. And I think seeing what she does in the Rebels, in the Rebel Alliance, I think is going to be interesting. So,
Yeah, Well, I think, you know, as you're talking there, it has me thinking that another great thing about Hera is she does, right? She becomes a general, which I don't, I mean, I'm assuming we're going to see in the final season of Rebels coming up, because she's still just a captain, right? Where we last left her.
I believe so.
What's so neat about her is she really climbs the ranks because she's been in the trenches. And mm-hmm. I think that's just another great attribute to her character. We don't know much about Dodonna's backstory or Madine or Ryken or not even really Ackbar. I mean, we had a sense that Ackbar had involvement in the Clone Wars. But it's just really cool to see that Hera is a great warrior who has climbed the ranks because of her experience in combat and her her way of proving herself. Which is really cool.
But let's be honest, part of it is she's, you know, probably also an officer who's managed to outlive some of her competition too. So let's be honest with the rebels at the stage that they're at. So
right.
But that's still a big point, because she's skilled enough to keep surviving.
Yeah.
And, you know, continue the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, and I like that scenario you paint for us, right? Of what's going to happen, right? When she has to make the decision between her family or her rebellion.
Right.
Because so far they've been one and the same.
Right. And I have a feeling that we're going to see some splintering. You know, there's going to be some splits and some paths that start wandering off. We know she's still with the rebels by Rogue One, so we'll see how much that affects some of the other characters in the Ghost crew. But it'll be interesting to see that journey and what that means for Hera.
Yeah. Well.
What's your number four?
Shall I give my number four?
Yes, please do.
Mine is Rey Skywalker.
Hold
the phone. She's not a Skywalker? I don't know.
Well, I mean, we don't know.
mine is definitely Rey. Again, both she and Kylo are characters that I want to know more about. So, for instance, as it stands right now, I actually probably would rank Jyn higher than both Kylo and Rey. But that's because we got her complete journey in one movie. But I think that we're going to get so much more for Kylo and Rey in these next two films that I have a feeling I'll like them more than Jyn. And that's not to belittle Jyn. I love Jyn. The thing I love about Rey, from the little bit of exposure we've already gotten, one, she's played by Daisy Ridley, so but she's
Hello, Mr. Abrams.
I wonder if she said hello, Mr. Johnson. Not quite. It doesn't have the same ring as Mr. Abrams.
No. Hello, Mr. Johnson.
It sounds a little dirty.
A little bit.
Hello, Miss Kennedy.
I get the feeling that she would call her Kathy.
Hello, Kathy. Hello, Mr. Lucas. Yeah.
There you go.
Bad impressions aside, I love heroes. Those are always some of my, you know, those are my favorite characters typically in Star Wars, is the heroic characters. And Rey is very much the new hero. But she's not the same character as Luke or Anakin. She's very much her own type of hero. And the thing I like about Rey, somewhat similar to Jyn, is when we meet her, she's kind of living in a world of isolation. The difference is whereas Jyn has, they've both been hardened by their lives, right? Jyn has been in an Imperial prison for a time. She fought with Saw Gerrera for a while. She's had a tough life. I keep meaning to sit down and read Rebel Rising. I think that might actually be a little bit more fun than the Thrawn book to me, but that's a separate issue. The thing I like about Rey is when we meet her is she's almost in her own self-imposed isolation at this point, because she's really holding out hope that her family, whoever that may be, is going to return. And
right.
She seems to, I don't know that she even knows who her family is per se. But I really I like the character because this is someone who's waiting for something, right? And it's kind of not necessarily an inversion, but it's a different starting point for Luke. Luke, right? Like Luke's experience is staring out at the sunset and clearly longing for something more, wanting to leave. I think the big kind of similar moment for Rey is when she is cleaning some of her stuff and she looks across the table and sees that old woman. And, you know, I think her fear in that moment is like, oh my God, I don't want to become this. Right. Jin is waiting on something. She's very passive, whereas Luke is more assertive, right? Luke wants to leave. I want to transmit my application to the Academy this year. Whereas, you know, Rey says to both Finn and Han, but I've got to get back to Jakku. You know, I've been away for too long as it is. Right. She really thinks that somebody's coming back for her. And I like that about her character. I like that she's waiting and hoping. You know, the scene with BB-8 when she says, I know all about waiting for my family. I love that. Like there's just a real vulnerability to her there that she really wants belonging. She wants a family. So those are all parts of her character that I really like. And also just, again, like that this is a character who has a very strong, innate connection to the Force. It's clearly been, you know, in the works for her all along. Like, she's, in a way, able to see things before they happen.
Right.
And I remember when I was at a small comic convention in Connecticut a few months ago, Greg and I were talking with Timothy Zahn, and he was saying how some things that he thought were missed opportunities in Force Awakens was, you know, whenever we see Rey do amazing things, they kind of come out of nowhere. He thought it would have been better. And I liked this one point. He said he thought it would have been neat if she tried using Force persuasion on Unkar Plot. Whether or not it works doesn't matter, but at least would show early on, like, oh, she's aware of what that is. Or, right, like we see something that kind of gives away the reality that she has the Force. But I guess you could say, I mean, her crazy good piloting skills out of nowhere shows that she has an innate connection. But she is kind of like Anakin. She's like this vergence in the Force. She is the new, I don't want to say chosen one. I hope she's not the chosen one, like in the way that Anakin was. But she is clearly the new hero. And, you know, by the end of the film, she's finally accepted that hero's journey to embark on. Because pretty much the entire movie, she denies it, right? She refuses Han. She refuses Finn first to leave with him. Then she refuses to come with Han. Then she refuses Maz's invitation. It's not until the end of the movie where she really steps up, right? Because at least Finn, and definitely Han, but Han's now dead, but her family is being threatened. So she comes to the aid of Finn, and then she finally listens to the Force. And that's why she's able to overcome Kylo in that moment. So she is starting to let her destiny be shaped by listening. So I'm really intrigued to see where that's going to take her as the journey continues.
Yeah. And I like what you were saying about how she's, you know, a lot more passive and in what, you know, in her goals at the beginning, because obviously Luke, like you said, is wishing to get off planet. It's interesting, while he's wishing, he's not necessarily actively pursuing anything, but that's where his ideas and his thoughts are centered, is to get off planet, to get off of Tatooine, get out of this place. Where Jin, and you see that reflected in for Luke in the fact that he goes out and he watches the twin sunset. You know, it's in one of the most brilliant images in cinema history. But when Jin goes home at the end of the day, she gets her food, she hunkers down underneath the shade of the foot of this AT-AT she's, you know, converted into a house with a helmet on. And she's just staring across the sands. You know, she's hunkered down. She's not going anywhere.
Right.
So in that moment, you know, that moment of rest, that moment of, you know, relief from the long, hard day's work, Luke is out watching and wishing that he could be somewhere else, and Rey is hunkered down, just moving on and keeping going the way she is. So it's an interesting comparison. So yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So
number three.
Yeah. Number three. This is where I'm going to put Kylo Ren. And I put Kylo Ren here because he is such a new villain, a new type of villain in Star Wars. And we've talked about this before, the whole idea that, you know, he's got the temptation to be good. You know, the light side is still drawing him. And it makes me wonder how far he actually stepped, you know, out of the light. Did he really go all that far? What made him break? What made him snap? Why, you know, and we assume this is the case. Why did he destroy Luke's order? And was it, you know, that much of a, that far of a step to get there? And can he be redeemed? And the obvious answer is probably yes. It's going to take a lot more than someone like Vader, who seems to have been drugged down the path to the dark side, in a sense, manipulated and twisted. And possibly Kylo was too. But Kylo is someone who is fighting against the good, where Vader just gave up. And someone who's fighting against the good and trying to resist the good and recognizing the pull that the light has on him is probably going to be more determined to resist that pull than someone who just gave up and then, you know, starts being drawn back towards the light by his son, who shows up and is extending kindness to him. And so Kylo is this very interesting character because obviously, you know, he's in this place that's, different for a Star Wars villain, but he's also someone that we don't really know much about other than the fact that he is the son of Han and Leia, which makes him the Skywalker so far for this movie, for this new trilogy, which is also an interesting thing. He's very obsessed with Granddad and does not appreciate the training at all that Luke gave him, his uncle. So so I'm fascinated with Kylo. And he's, you know, it's almost hard sometimes for me to call him a villain because he's more of an antagonist, in my opinion, because there is so much unknown and so much still shifting and, you know, settling with him. We don't really know where he's going to fall on this fault line here. And it's a fascinating thing that they've done. And one of the most interesting aspects of the new trilogy at this point for me is who is Kylo? What is he about? And where is he going? What is he doing? You know, it has me so curious. And then, of course, he's got that angry saber, which is pretty cool. And the fact that he can grab a laser bolt and freeze it in midair and hold it throughout an entire conversation and let it go when nobody else is paying attention to it, it's pretty cool, too. So,
yeah, he does have cool force powers.
He's powerful in the Force.
Yeah.
He's definitely inherited some of the Skywalker strength in the Force. So,
yeah. And just imagine what's going to happen if he can really learn to focus that energy, right? Right now, it's like I said, it's kind of like this just bursting all over the place. So what's going to happen when Snoke is able to really focus that energy towards his own ends?
Right.
You know, and even Han points that out, right? Like, Snoke's just using you for your power. Once he's got what he's after, you know, he'll what does he say? He'll finish you, or God, why can't I remember this?
He'll cast you aside or something like that? No, I don't remember.
It's not quite that dramatic. Hold on one second. No, it's not.
What is it?
No, what do you know what it is?
No, I don't know what it is.
Okay,
I'm forgetting.
Oh my gosh, there's so many things. Move. Here we go. I really need to know right now. I don't know why, but I really want to know what he says. Once he has what he He'll crush you. That's what it is. Once he has what he wants, he'll crush you. You know him, right? There we go. Yes. Finally. Got it. Got it.
There we go.
All right. Let's see. I'm going to confirm that. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
You think you'll see if I do?
The face of my son.
Yes. Take off your mask. Your son is gone. Say it. Come on. Running a podcast here.
Your son, he's gone. He was weak and foolish like his father. So I destroyed him.
That's what Snoke wants you to believe. But it's not true. My son is alive.
No. The Supreme Leader is wise.
Snoke is using you for your power. When he gets what he wants, he'll crush you.
There it is.
There it is.
And we just wasted 2 minutes to find that. Sorry, everybody.
But still, that's a conversation that highlights this intriguing internal battle that's going on within Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
Because he's dropped the name of Ben Solo. He's Kylo Ren. I destroyed your son. He's trying to remake himself as a new person, but obviously it's not working because he confesses to Vader's helmet that he's still struggling. He's still fighting the light side and the pull and his identity. You know, it's such an interesting thing, and I'm really curious to see where he goes with it. So that's why he's number three on my list. So,
yeah, well, obviously I like him too. my number three, who I assume is, I'm pretty sure will be on your list as well, but is good old Chirrut. I love Chirrut.
Yes.
And how could I not, as someone whose favorite element, if you will, of Star Wars is spirituality. To me, Chirrut is the most, a spiritual character in Star Wars, most intentionally spiritual character in Star Wars.
Yes.
Right, like, yes, Yoda is a spiritual character, Qui-Gon is a spiritual character, but they also are caught up in other things, right? Like, Qui-Gon is still part of a Jedi Order. Yoda is trying to run a Jedi Order in the midst of a war. I think Yoda becomes even more... I mean, Empire Strikes Back Yoda is a very spiritual Yoda, more so than prequel Yoda. But Chirrut's, I think, almost sole purpose in Rogue One, his character's purpose, is to be the spiritual center of that movie, right? I mean, this was a movie that we were told, like, there's not going to be Jedi, there's not going to be lightsabers, except for Vader for, 30 seconds. This is going to be a very from-the-ground-level story, but I think... And I don't know if this was their exact thoughts as they were putting together the screenplay, but I'm wondering if they thought, well, we can't not have some level of spirituality because that, again, is an essential part of a Star Wars film. So almost as if Chirrut was created to fill that potential void. And again, like, I just see his character as so intentionally spiritual. He is this warrior monk, which is something very cool. I mean, I think that in and of itself, Chirrut, you can assume, obviously, the other Guardians of the Wills probably are good at combat as well, but it's very in line with, like, Eastern spirituality, where in, like, Eastern monastic orders where monks do train in some form of martial arts. And it's not necessarily to really be in combat situations for the sake of combat, but it's more because it's like a trained art form to make you more spiritually aware. And that seems like what it is for Chirrut as well, but it also does have practical value. But Chirrut is a character whose whole devotion is to the Force. Right. I mean, he is devoted to Baze. He's later going to be devoted to his little Rogue One crew. But his overall overarching devotion is to the Force. So, of course, I love that. And he is someone who completely trusts in the Force and gives himself completely to it. And he has this extremely strong faith. You know, even in the midst of these war-torn streets of Jeddah, Chirrut walks out and says, "Let them pass in peace. For all is as the Force wills it." I mean, this is someone in the midst of somewhat of a chaotic situation, still trusts that the Force is shaping and moving the galaxy's events. So I just, I mean, I love that. As a spiritual person myself, there is a lot for me to attach to and learn from Chirrut. Also, Chirrut is someone, again, he's the wise character in the film, right? When they're locked up in, Saw's little cell there, you know, his little word of wisdom to Cassian is great. Like, I there are many kinds of prisons. I sense that you carry yours wherever you go. Right. Mm-hmm. He is someone who's able to, in a way, very quickly and easily pick up on people's deeper selves, right? That is very reminiscent of a strong spiritual figure. Again, in our own culture, monks of all sorts of religious traditions or famous saints are said to be able to, like, see your deeper self, even though they don't know you very well. They just kind of have this innate connection to the bigger picture that they can understand people's deeper selves. And it seems that Chirrut has that ability because of his strong connection to the Force. He knows what kind of person Cassian is without ever really sitting down and talking to him. So I like that. I like that this is a person who is extremely grounded in the Force and lets the Force be his whole reality and his mode of being. And this is a dude who's blind, right? Like, he literally sees with the eyes of faith. That's how he's able to do what he does. And again, can't say enough about his epic walk to the Master Switch, where he literally just throws himself into the shield of the Force and just walks out there with nothing else but to accomplish a task. And if that's the will of the Force, he'll do it. And if it's not, whatever. And even in his demise, right, he goes out with this beatific smile of, like, I know what the Force is doing. I know what's happening here. So, yeah, I love Chirrut.
Yes. You almost said Shield of Faith, didn't you?
Yeah. Why? Is that not right?
I just thought it was funny. I will obviously be reserving comment for just a moment here. yes. But I've still got my number two to get to. So obviously, everyone knows who's my favorite character now.
Well, if anyone's been listening for a while, I don't think anyone's going to come. That's not going to come as a huge surprise.
No, it shouldn't. And if it is, what are you doing? Right?
Yeah.
So if it is a surprise, then you haven't been listening very long. Right. That being said, my number two is going to be Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight. I like Kanan a lot.
Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight.
Yes. Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight.
so good at it.
I love that. Love that quote. But I love Kanan too. So Kanan is a fascinating character because, you know, he's someone who was supposed to be a Jedi. He was training to be a Jedi, and then that got cut short by Order 66. He was, his whole goal, his whole identity was going towards being this, this Jedi, this force in the galaxy, you know, pardon the pun. and he was supposed to be, you know, fighting for good. And then Order 66 happened and he has to completely stuff down that entire identity of who he was and completely change who he is in order to remain hidden. And we saw in the Kanan comics that he, you know, becomes a sort of a smuggler, rogue sort of thing. And then finally he meets up with Hera after, you know, planet hopping, taking odd jobs, trying to avoid the limelight. And whenever things get, you know, hairy or sticky or something gets revealed accidentally, he moves on. He runs into Hera and she's like, hey, I think you could help me out here. And he finally is able to get a purpose again. And then what we see in Rebels is the identity that he thought he had lost the identity that he was had been working towards, the identity that he thought he had had to abandon, start to rise up again, and have that come into conflict with who he is now, and try and find the balance between that, and go through the insecurities of, you know, do I lean more towards the Jedi side? Do I lean more towards the Rebel side? What's safer? What's more appropriate? What is going to be most beneficial, you know, to the, not only myself, but the people around me in this family that I'm now a part of? And seeing him make these decisions and make these choices, and then have, you know, the whole blinding incident with Maul come in and test the choices that he has made. He's finally made the decision that, no, he's going to be a Jedi. He's going to walk in the Force. And then that gets immediately tested by Maul and this, you know, blinding him. And now he has to learn to rely on the Force completely in a way that he never thought he would have to. And it's just such a fascinating thing. And I'm really concerned they're going to kill him off, because he's the most likely candidate for that to happen to in season 4 of Rebels. I'm hoping that nobody dies, you know, that we get a Return of the Jedi type of ending here for some of these characters. They all kind of go off in the sunset their own separate ways. But I feel like he's the most likely candidate for a heroic death, and that has me worried. But, you know, he's someone who has sort of had to step into a similar role as Chirrut, and step into a similar space mentally as Chirrut, because he has to rely completely on the Force. He can't trust his eyes anymore. So it's, you know, it's interesting that my two favorite Star Wars Disney characters are currently blind. So I find that interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to reserve comment.
I figured you would.
Yeah.
Who's your number two?
Well, this is going to give away my number one, obviously, but my number two is Cassian Andor.
I knew he was going to end up in this list somewhere.
This is, again, something Cassian's super high on my list, and I don't have as much to say about him. Even in the same way, like, I love Han Solo as my favorite Star Wars character. I couldn't tell you – if I listed all the reasons I love Luke Skywalker, it'd be a very long list. If I did that for Han, it'd be much shorter. Again, it's just there's something about the character that I really like. And the fact that Cassian kind of looks like Han Solo doesn't hurt. In this, like, his outfit, obviously, not physically. Cassian's character grabbed me right from the second I first saw him in Rogue One. And I think what I like about Cassian so much is he's kind of like James Bond meets Star Wars in a way, right? He's the Rebel Alliance's MI6, right? He's the behind-the-scenes spy who probably has been well-trained in all sorts of covert operations. Let me be straight up and superficial for a second. My favorite thing about Cassian is the look. He's such a cool looking character in my opinion that right off the bat, I like him. And what's so cool about Cassian is his outfit, his costume is such a callback to like a Buck Rogers type thing. It also looks very similar to the outfits that they wear in the original Battlestar Galactica series, which obviously is a ripoff of Star Wars. Just his look, it just settles me into like, yep, this is a George Lucas Star Wars look. It's in the sense that it's very heavily informed by the old Buck Rogers series that George himself loved. Something that's not to shy away from with Cassian is I like somebody who's so focused and passionate about something. Cassian is a little bit of a rough around the edges type of character. Like, I don't think I would, if I had a pick of who from Rogue One I'd like to sit down and just have a drink and a conversation with, it'd probably be 9 times out of 10 Chirrut, 1 time out of 10 Cassian. Because Cassian is definitely tough around the edges.
I don't think he'd carry a conversation well.
Yeah. So Cassian, tell me about your mom.
I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old.
She's been dead since I was 5.5 years old. You know, yeah, I feel like he'd be pretty
okay.
Great, chill out, bro. Have another blue milk. yeah, I mean, but what I like about Cassian is he's clearly just like Jin in a way, right? Like so many of our Star Wars characters, his early life is marked with tragedy, but yet he's still so passionately involved in the galaxy's story, right? He's doing everything he can to make a difference. And I like that solitary focus. And nothing will break him from that. You know, surprisingly, we still haven't gotten anything. Well, I think we will eventually, but at least I hope we do. I hope we get some sort of series on Cassian's backstory, whether it's in a comic or a novel or something. But, you know, Cassian, just his whole life is about fighting for freedom. And I remember, it's in one of the source guide books, but Cassian's family grew up on a separatist planet. So, I mean, he was involved in the Clone Wars, but he fought for the separatists, which I, again, just think is a really cool twist. And now his whole focus is on the rebellion. But what's so great about Cassian that I like is he too has a character change, right? I mean, his whole character in a way is very, you know, tough and rough up through most of the movie until towards the end, and he learns to be vulnerable. Jin teaches him how to be vulnerable. And if you think about the end of that movie, he really does have such a soft heart, even though he's such a hard man. I still don't think that I would say that like Jin and Cassian, what develops there at the end of the film is romantic. I really don't think it is.
No,
I don't think it's specifically not that, but I think it's more of just this mutual respect and care for one another. That maybe with more time, yes, could have definitely blossomed into something romantic. Right. Like their bickering reminds me a little bit of Han and Leia. If their stories weren't cut short by that mushroom cloud, there's a good chance if they'd escaped that they might have eventually developed feelings. But what I like so much about Cassian there is he does learn how to be vulnerable and let someone else in. And so we see his character develop and essentially be transformed. So he himself, like Jin, is on a little bit of a hero's journey. I love the speech he gives to Jin towards the end of the movie with like when he volunteers to help, because he's like, you know what, they weren't going to help, but I understand that if we don't do this, everything I've done so far will have been in vain. And it's very clear at that moment, especially in regards to the thing Chirrut says to him earlier in the film about his prison, right? Cassian is very much imprisoned by guilt. You know, that's what defines his character, is he clearly feels guilty for all the shady things he's done for the Alliance. And he sees this as the opportunity to vindicate all of that. Like, if I don't do this, everything I did was in vain. And I'm a pretty crappy person. Even if I said it was for good reasons, I did some horrible things. And I think he sees this as a way of breaking from command. We have a strong sense that Cassian's not the type to disobey orders. Right? Like, I mean, he even says that to Jin when he's like, I had orders that I disobeyed. But you wouldn't understand that, right? Like, he's very much, no matter what the orders are, as horrible as they may be, he's the one who always follows through. But what changes his mind is, I think he sees Jin's love for her father, and that's what changes him. And that love, in a way, kind of gets in under his skin and fleshes him out. And again, the end of that movie, we see, you know, he saves Jin by taking out Krennic, and then in a way even saves her from holding on to that anger, right? Like, she wants to go and, I don't know, kick him or maybe push him off the edge there, but he doesn't let her. And I really, really like that. What's so great about his character too is, he goes out by giving Jin, this lovely line of your father would be proud. You know, he validates her in his last moments. His last moments are about somebody else. They're in no way about himself. So again, he's like this selfless hero that is very quintessential to Star Wars.
Well, first of all, I want to say for a character that you weren't going to have a lot to say on, you definitely found a lot to say.
I guess I had more to say than I thought I was going to.
I like Cassie. Now, obviously, he's not on my list, but he's a great character and one I definitely would like to see and learn more about. I will say I'm not going to say too much because you covered a lot of what I would have said anyways. But I will say that I think the moments that really highlight the transformation that he goes through from the beginning of the movie to the end, obviously pre-transformation is the assassination of his informant there in his first scene. And then the end of the movie where Jin is going to go beat the crap out of Krennic and he stops her in order to help her let go and help her move on, is something that I think is, those two moments in particular, I feel really highlight the change and the openness and the, with which he is now walking, because he was very closed off, very, you know, did not allow anyone in, anyone to affect him, at the beginning. And then at the end, he's, you know, acting out of, you know, not necessarily love in a romantic sense, but love in a familial or friendship sense, in order to help someone out in a very selfless manner. So, yeah, I think that definitely highlights the transition and the transformation that you were talking about with Cassian. So I think I'll just leave it at that.
Well, there you go. And shall we talk about our number ones?
I suppose we should. My number one, as we've already figured out, is going to be Chirrut Imwe. The one and only Chirrut. I absolutely love him so flippin' much. He's definitely a character who, the more I watch Rogue One, the more I like him. So he's definitely a character who could break into my top 10 characters in Star Wars of all time, sooner or later, depending on how many other interesting characters they end up creating. That being said, it's for many of the same reasons you outlined. He's definitely the moral center, the spiritual center of Rogue One, of the crew that we meet and create here. He's also the one who has the firmest belief and the firmest grasp of his identity and who he is. He has no questions, no doubts. He is the one who has, through years and years of dedication, meditation, devotion to his religion, his faith, to the Guardians of the Wills, is someone who is very firm and has a very defined identity. And he's definitely he's probably the rock that everyone sort of, in a way, relies on in Rogue One, and that they're able to push themselves off and to support themselves with. And it's his faith and his belief and that solidness in who he is and that knowledge in his identity is something that very few characters in Star Wars seem to have. And it's one of those things where honestly, I think the only other character I'm thinking of off the top of my head who has any, you know, sort of firm knowledge and firm grasp on their identity and who they are and what they're about in the way that he does is not a good guy. And that's Palpatine. Palpatine knows he's evil. Palpatine knows what he's about. And he's going to do whatever it takes to do that. But Chirrut is one of the few, you know, light side characters who really seems to, I don't want to say have it all figured out, but he's definitely got himself to the place where what he can't figure out, he will rely on the Force and his faith to get him through it. And that's all he needs. But he's also someone who, when the Force moves, he's moved by it. He's open to the Force. He's not someone who's Force sensitive in the sense that he can, tell the will of the Force and then act on that. He's someone who keeps himself very open and lets the Force direct him and guide him and move him. And that's something that's also – it's something that is something I would really like to learn from. And it says, you talked about something that, as someone of faith, we have a lot to learn from Chirrut. And I wholeheartedly agree. He's definitely a good role model. I will say that. And then, of course, on top of that, he's got a cool stick that he swings around and uses. I mean, come on. He's a blind warrior monk who can, see the enemies better than we see them with our eyes. He's, highly skilled. And not only is he able to, in physical combat, see things and address the issues and take down his foes, but in interpersonal communication, he sees things clearer than anyone else. With Cassian, as you said, he gives him that comment of, "I sense you carry your prison wherever you go," which obviously hits a mark with Cassian. I almost said Kanan, but it's Cassian. And then when Cassian goes out to explore Edu, he notices and notes that he's got ulterior motives, and he's not someone who's at the moment thinking purely about what he's about to do. And then of course there's that master switch scene, which chills every single time, and I don't want to talk too much about it, but but I love it and it's great. I could watch an entire series with Chirrut and Baze, just following them around Jedha, see what they get up to. I love Chirrut so much, and I'm so glad that he was created as a character. He's my number one. There's no doubt about it.
I'm not surprised. But
that was we came up with this list. I was like, okay, so who comes after Chirrut?
Yeah. I was the same way with my number one. So,
Let me guess. You're number one, and I'll let you say it. So,
well, actually, I really want to real quick though. I like your point that you just made about Chirrut being, in a way, kind of a complete character, right? And that allows him to be the rock for the group. Typically, our heroes in Star Wars have some level of development that they have to go through. Chirrut is developed. I mean, we meet him; he's the same character when we first meet him till when he dies.
Yes.
And that's not to say he doesn't go through things. He certainly does. But what's so incredible is he is the same person through all of that. I really like that. We've never had such a complete character in Star Wars before. So I like that you hit on that. Yeah, that's really cool. And again, I think that's because he's so centered in the Force. Right.
Yes.
Yoda's one of my favorite Yoda lines is, "A Jedi's strength flows from the Force."
So does Chirrut's.
Yes. Right. And exactly, like, Chirrut is not a Jedi, but the Force clearly is in him and is manifested in a way through him. Chirrut is someone who, the Force is certainly. The Force acts on him, but he's not asserting the Force ever, kind of like a Jedi does. And not asserting it like a Sith, but Jedi, like, they use the Force, right? Like, they're part, like, they commune with it, but they also use it. Chirrut is more like used by the Force, in a way.
Right.
As we're talking about all this stuff, just makes me think at some point here, we need to sit down and do another show on the Force and just talking about how the Force has evolved in Star Wars, right? Like,
yes,
what George Lucas gave to us in 1977 is very clearly evolved to what it is today. And I don't think they're different. It's just, it's evolved, which is really cool. Jared really encapsulates that in his character.
Yeah. One last thing I do want to put out there is if you haven't had a chance, pick up Guardians of the Wills if you want just a little bit more insight into Cheriton Bayes. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a very interesting – it's a short book. It's a quick read. But it's got, you know, a little glimpse into their life before Rogue One, when Saw Gerrera started shaking things up on Jeddah, and the consequences that that has, and the choices that Chirrut and Baze make in those unstable period there. So I enjoyed it a lot. So
nice. Yeah, I started it. I never finished it. No reason why. Perhaps I should go back and finish it.
Yeah, the first third or half is a bit slow starting, but when things start moving, it gathers speed like a snowball going downhill or something.
Great.
And the way that they solve the problem at the end is amazing. Because it's not necessarily combat filled, but it's pretty awesome and epic in its own way. So,
excellent.
They were led by the Force.
Great teaser.
Yes. All right. Who's your number one?
My number one is Kanan Jarrus. He has been by far my favorite character we've gotten from Star Wars since Disney has taken over, and. You know, again, it's partly the look. Also, Kanan is very much, in a way, kind of a Kyle Katarn type character. Kyle Katarn was always one of my favorite characters in the old expanded universe. And the reason for that was because he was kind of this mix of a Jedi and a smuggler, which was perfect because when I was a kid, I loved Han Solo, but I also loved Jedi. So Kyle Katarn represented kind of the bringing together of those two types of characters. And while Kanan's certainly not a smuggler, he is he's a non-force user and a force user in a way.
It's a bit of a rogue.
Yes. And Kanan is the exact type of character I pretended to be when I played Star Wars for years as a kid. He is the one who can use the force, but he's not necessarily a full-on Jedi. And, you know, his story is so intriguing because, like you said, you know, he definitely started his Jedi training. He never completed it. And what's so interesting, and I've tried twice to read A New Dawn, and I just cannot get through it. Again, in my opinion, John Jackson Miller is, like, the worst author. And I know people love him, but I can't stand him. I think he's a horrible writer. And I'm not trying to like be mean to the man. I'm sure he's a lovely fellow. Kenobi, it took so long to get good. And when it did, yes, it got great. But I was waiting forever for A New Dawn to get good, and I feel like it never did. It had its highlights. I will say that it has it's got some good stuff in there, but I don't know. John Jackson Miller's just not a good author in my book.
Not your cup of tea.
Yes. But that being said, what I like about Kanan is when we, you know, I mean, yes, the reveal happens in the very first episode, but Kanan has kind of been living in secret, right? Like one of the biggest parts of who he is as a person has been shut up and shut away because he knows the second I whip out my lightsaber, people are going to know what kind of person I am, right? And I love that line he says to Ezra in the very first episode of Rebels, you know, kid, I'm about to let a whole lot of people in on my secret, right? And he puts his lightsaber together. So cool. He doesn't even have it put together, right? Like it just looks like a comlink or something on his belt. And here he is. Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight.
You know? Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight.
Lol.
Welcome to the galaxy. There you go.
I mean, and this is someone who very much did not have a complete Jedi training, and now he, in a way, has become a master. He is trying his best to impart his knowledge to Ezra. And what I love about Kanan, and this definitely hits home for me as someone who was officially a teacher and has been a teacher-like person for many years, I feel like I've learned the most by teaching things to others. The more I've taught things, the more I have to unpack it and relearn it myself. And I love that about Kanan, right? Whenever he's training Ezra, he's very open about the fact that sometimes he doesn't know exactly what he's doing. And he himself is learning along the way, which I think it's a very unique type of master-apprentice relationship. You know, if you look at Anakin and Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan is very much the master. Like he never second guesses himself. Same with Qui-Gon with Obi-Wan. Same with Yoda and Luke, or Obi-Wan and Luke, right? Like the master is always very clearly the master with a capital M. Kanan is a very much lowercase M master for Ezra. And I just think that's really cool to watch him grow as he's training Ezra and as he continues to learn new things by doing this process. And to me, it also gives greater insight as to why they gave Anakin a Padawan, right? Because having a Padawan, having someone to train, makes you a better Jedi. And I think Kanan is a far better Jedi now, especially in light of what happened with Maul, than he'd ever been, because one, he's living his truth again by training Ezra. And secondly, he's had to go back to the basics of what it means to be a Jedi after going blind by learning to completely rely on the Force. So again, what a great similarity between him and Chirrut. They're not the same character by any means, but they have this very similar disposition towards the Force of just right. complete reliance upon it. And the thing I really like about Kanan too, especially, again, the first season of Rebels to me is borderline flawless. I love that first season. I think season 2 and 3 have had, you know, their pitfalls, but season 1 especially is a perfect season. And what I like about Kanan so much in that season is he, in a way, reminds me of Spider-Man. And in the sense of like he's very close to the ground. He's doing things on a very localized level. He's not necessarily as concerned about getting involved with some wide scale rebellion. His biggest concern is just helping out the little people when he can. Have you seen Spider-Man Homecoming yet, Jason?
No, I haven't been able to get to the theater to see it, and it's bugging the snot out of me.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I want to say something, but it kind of reveals the end, so I won't say it. But in the newest movie of Spider-Man, I'll just say that Spider-Man makes a decision to keep himself involved in the fight for the little people. He's not as concerned about being an Avenger, right? Like, he's not Captain America who's worrying about the next big global threat. Spider-Man's focus is the little people in Queens, New York, right? Like, and I like that about
him. Well, he is your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Right. And that's something that's developed a lot in the movie. You got to see that movie. Oh my God, the movie's so good. But anyway, Kanan is kind of a hero like that in the Star Wars galaxy. And right when they, you know, in season 2, as they start getting more and more involved in the rebellion, it might even be in the first episode of season 2. Can't remember. But when they start making these plans with the small alliance fleet they're with, and Kanan gets pissed, right, and kind of like trudges off, and Hera confronts him. And he's like, I've already been in a war. I don't want to be in another one, right? Like, Kanan is very reluctant to get involved in the rebellion, I think partly because of his own inner demons of seeing war firsthand and the trauma that it creates. But I also like to think, too, it's because he just wants to stay helping with the little people. And I really like that about Kanan. You know, he's not trying to make a name for himself. He's not trying to be like this grand master who's going to go conquer the galaxy. I mean, it's very clear in the beginning of season 2 when they fight Darth Vader, you know, and Ezra says to him, like, geez, how are we going to beat that? And he's like, beat him? We were lucky to survive. Like, Kanan already writes himself off like, we can't do this. But obviously season 3, he's willing to explore how do we conquer the Sith. But yeah, Kanan is just such a great character who, and especially as a Jedi who grew up in the prequel era, he's come a long way, right? Like the flaw that we've all talked about a million times is the flaw of the Jedi in the prequels is they're too dogmatic and stuck in their ways. Kanan has not got any of that in his blood, right? Like Kanan is very open to the Force moving him in new ways. I mean, that's his, you know, fascination with the Bendu and learning from the Bendu. And I think, again, to get speculatory for a moment, I think that if he doesn't die in season four, which I'm okay if he does, as long as it's a really cool heroic death. But if he doesn't, I see him again, like passing into the background and doing something new with the Force. Right. He's not going to be a Jedi. Like, it's very clear at the start of A New Hope, the only Jedi in the galaxy are Kenobi and Yoda. That's it. So you can't have him and Ezra still running around, in my opinion. I think that messes too much with the core mythology of Star Wars. That aside, I love that Kanan is willing to listen to the Force and let it take him in new directions. And that's great. And also, Kanan has learned the goodness in attachment, right? I think the archaic view of the Jedi Order of old of complete non-attachment, right, to the extent that like you can't have an intimate relationship. I love that Kanan has shirked that mandate by clearly being in a relationship with Hera. And I think Kanan sees the strength in attachment, sees the strength most specifically in loving relationships. You know, both his loving relationship of Hera, but also his love for Ezra and Sabine and Zeb. You know, I mean, I think one of the most powerful episodes of anything from Star Wars was the episode this past season with Kanan training Sabine. And, you know, as they're training and fighting, like he becomes this safe space for her to vent out her real truth. So again, I love that about Kanan, that he encourages people to be their truest selves because he too has come to accept his truest self, right? Like the Kanan we see now in Rebels is someone who has accepted who he is, a Jedi, and he's willing to live that out, whatever the consequences. And because of his authenticity, he encourages others to be authentic. So yeah, I've said a whole lot. I should shut up now, but I love Kanan.
Yeah, we've been going for quite a while. I didn't think we were going to get this go this long on this topic, but oh my gosh, there's a whole lot of brand new characters that are so good, and obviously we could probably talk longer and longer and longer about each of these characters and more. But we got some other things we got to do to wrap up this show. Carl, we adjusted some of the Patreon levels here. So you wanted to let everybody know what those were, right?
Yes. So, for starters, I hope you enjoyed our conversation about our favorite Disney characters. And again, which we'll talk about in a minute, but we welcome you to share some of your favorite Disney Star Wars characters through our social media. Mm-hmm. But before that, yeah, we've revamped our Patreon page, which again can be found at patreon.com/wampuslerpodcast. And we've changed up essentially a couple of our rewards tiers. And the reason for that is essentially at the end of the day, if we're going to, you know, do extra episodes each month, which we are certainly happy to do, we want to make sure that they're something that we also really enjoy doing. Because I'd like to think you and I both put in a decent amount of prep into every episode we do. Anyway, that being said, our new revamped tiers for Patreon is if you give a dollar, again, we will announce your name on the show. And of course we appreciate the support. And in the future, I'll hit pause there for a second. That's the $1. It's essentially a recognition on the show. The yes. $5 tier now is once a month, Jason and I will do a scene by scene breakdown of the Star Wars films. And once we have some people pledged in that new tier, right now it's completely empty because it's a new tier we just posted. Once we have some folks pledged in that tier, we're going to ask you what movie you want us to start with. Happy to start with episode 1, episode 4. Happy to start with any of the movies, really. It doesn't matter because it's going to take a long time to get through each of them. So it doesn't really matter the order. If you want us to start with Empire or Jedi or Attack of the Clones, that's fine.
But essentially, Or Rogue One, for that matter.
And the way it's going to work is once a month, we'll sit down and we'll take a scene. Now, some scenes are 2 minutes long. Some scenes are 15 minutes long. It'll depend. But for example, if we took Return of the Jedi, right? The first scene is Vader, you know, landing on Death Star 2. And that, you know, from the second he lands to him walking off screen, that's a scene. Another scene a little later on would be, you know, 3PO and R2 coming into Jabba's palace up through being told that they're being delivered as presents to Jabba, right? So, like, those scenes will, their longevity will change each month. Hopefully that makes sense. Again, it's kind of in the vein of the acts, you know, how we've been breaking down the acts in the past, like Act 1, Return of the Jedi, Act 2, Return of the Jedi. But this will allow for even more in-depth discussion because I've noticed that sometimes when we're even doing the act breakdowns, it's hard to get through everything. This will allow us to get even more specific. So if that's something you're interested in, that is in the $5 tier. The $10 tier, we'll continue doing Rebels episodes. We'll continue to break down in-depth analysis of each Rebels episode that's been on. We've only done a few so far, so that'll continue if you're in the $10 tier. And then we have a $20 tier. So this actually used to be 25, but we just figured just for consistency's sake, we do 5, 10, 20. The $20 tier now is, again, you get to pick a topic that you'd like to record on. You tell us what that topic is, and then you record with us. That simple. We're going to be doing one again in the next few weeks with a patron who just pledged in that particular tier. So that'll be coming up soon. So if that's something you're interested in, you want to be on the Wampus Lair because you have a topic you really want to discuss, that's in the $20 tier. And then we've kept the $100 tier that still hasn't had anybody claim it yet, which is fine. It's a lot of money. But again, that is Joe Hogan will do an official Wampus Lair print of you in the Wampus Lair with Jason and I. And we'll use that as our logo for the month. And of course, we'll send you a hard copy, printed copy of that print so that you can frame it on your wall.
Yes.
The last thing I want to say is, anybody who's going to be new to Patreon, or even those of you who have been supporting us all along, I encourage you, actually, for those of you who are going to be new patrons, when you sign up, no matter what tier you're in, it's going to ask you for a mailing address. The only reason it's asking for that, it's not so that Jason and I can come to your home. Trust me, we don't have the money to travel. And also, we're not stalkers.
Although, I know some people would love that if we just randomly showed up and said, hi!
Hey, we're recording at your house. but the reason for that is because we have just a small little thank you gift to start mailing out to everybody who is one of our patrons. Doesn't matter what tier you're in. So if you're a current patron and you didn't have that option, I encourage you to message us on Patreon with your mailing address so that we can send you. It's a very, very small gift. I want to stress that. Like, don't get super excited. It's not like a 6-inch Black Series figure or something. It's just a very simple thank you gift that we'd like to send to you for helping support the show. So any new patrons, please. And again, if you don't want that or you're not comfortable sharing your address, certainly no problem. But if you are, that's the only reason it's being asked, is so that we can mail you a small thank you. And then the last thing I want to say, I know I'm talking a lot here. The last thing I want to say is I did this new segment that I came up with called Skywalker Tales back in July, even though I was supposed to be taking the time off, but it was something I thought would be a lot of fun. And essentially, the purpose of Skywalker Tales is to essentially compare scenes in Star Wars to some sort of biblical narrative and talk about what the teaching points in those stories might be. So if that's a segment that you're interested in hearing, I'm going to make that segment a monthly thing once we've hit $120 in pledges on our Patreon. I think we're sitting at, or is it $125. We're sitting at $108 right now. So if we can just pledge 17 more dollars, that'll start to become something that'll be coming out once a month. And again, that'll be available to all patrons, whether you're $1 or $100, you'll have access to that particular show. So
very cool.
There you go.
So, yes, Patreon has been revamped, so go check it out. If you already support us, go check it out. See where you're lying, if anything's changed for you, so that you're aware of what you'll be getting in the near future. And if you are interested in signing up for Patreon and supporting us, we would appreciate if you went over, check that out, and see what options you might be able to support us at. So, again, thank you very much for those who are supporting us now and those who continue to support. Who are going to support us in the future. And just thank you for everybody for listening, because even if you're not supporting us on Patreon, we appreciate you and the fact that you come and listen week after week to us and our little podcast as we talk about Star Wars. Because this is a hobby. This is a fan thing. We're just a bunch of fanboys that decided to, you know, we have a microphone, so let's talk.
Indeed. You're quite right about that.
But before we wrap up this episode, we do have a matchup for you to weigh in on, that we want to get your thoughts on and get, back into the swing of these, sort of things. So, we're revving back up into the regular stuff here for Wampa's Lair. So our matchup coming up, is we want to pit Kylo Ren versus Kanan Jarrus and Ezra Bridger. So, we want to know your thoughts on who would win in the matchup of Kylo versus Kanan and Ezra. So, I think that would be an interesting matchup. I don't know where I'm leaning yet, because we came up with that today and I haven't had a chance to think about it. But I'm really curious to see what people say and how they think this might break down. So, Carl, if people want to weigh in on our matchup, if they want to give us some of their top Star Wars Disney characters, where can they do that?
Well, they can do it over on Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter at WampasLair. You can always send us an email at WampasLairPodcast@gmail.com. And like we said, if you want to check out all the new things on Patreon, patreon.com/WampasLairPodcast.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up this episode?
No. It's good to be back in the lair with you, Jason.
It's good to be back in the lair. My fellow guardian of the will. all right. Well, I think that'll wrap up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 242, Top 5 Star Wars Disney Characters. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.